Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, man, do I have a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to kick it off here with the 2015 Time Person of the Year. Was it a good pick? Was it a bad pick? Why not? I'm going to break that down, and I'm going to tell you some surprising stuff about the poll. Break out your tinfoil hats, because we're going to need them today. Some of you might already have a clue as to what I'm talking about with that poll. Then as we move along here, we have Greenpeace doing an undercover investigation, and they found out that climate science deniers are paying so-called scientists to make shit up and to come out with a biased narrative on topics that they have a vested interest in portraying a certain way. So we have that sleazy nonsense going on behind the scenes. We already knew that that was the case, but I guess you had Greenpeace decided to give us further concrete evidence of this. And then we also have Ted Cruz making an ass of himself because it's a day that ends in Y. The UK is trying to ban Donald Trump. We have the re-release of a poll of Muslims and on the issue of Islam. We have a lady who is a professor who dared to actually argue for freedom of speech, and now she has to step down because of the backlash for her controversial opinion on the side of free expression and free speech. Oh, what's happening, man? What's happening? I'm not happy with that. I'm not happy with a lot of this stuff, but anyway, let's go ahead and start here, and like I said, we'll kick it off with that brand new Time Person of the Year story. So Time's 2015 Person of the Year is out, and it's Angela Merkel, who of course is the leader of Germany. Huffington Post reports, quote, Merkel managed the economic collapse in Greece this summer and has been at the forefront of handling Europe's massive refugee influx this fall. Merkel brandished a different set of values, humanity, generosity, and tolerance, to demonstrate how Germany's great strength could be used to save rather than destroy. Germany is poised to accept up to 1 million refugees by the end of 2015. So that's basically their reasoning right there. They say that she's the person of the year because of what happened in Greece and because she's accepting refugees. Is that enough, in my opinion, to give her Time's Person of the Year? It's their choice. It's their decision. They get to do whatever the fuck they want. But if I was somehow involved in the process and I got a vote, I wouldn't have went in that direction. I mean, even how she handled the Greece situation, this idea that it was like, oh, it all worked out perfectly, everybody shut up and look away. That's not true. In fact, you know, some can argue and have argued that she handled it in a very biased way, and the people that got screwed in that scenario were probably the people of Greece. So am I, you know, celebrating this decision? No, I'm not. I wouldn't have gone in this direction. Again, it's their choice. It's their organization. They get to do whatever the fuck they want. But let me give you some more here in terms of who else they were considering. On the short list was Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who's the head of ISIS. Now, I know a lot of people are probably like, whoa, what do you mean? Why would you give him the person of the year? Well, they don't necessarily make a distinction between, like, hey, you're the person of the year in that you did nothing but good. It's just who is the person of the year, regardless of the details. Excuse me. It could be somebody who's negative, like Baghdadi, or it could be somebody like Angela Merkel, who they argue is absolutely fantastic. Also on the list, Donald Trump. I'll leave that one right there. Black Lives Matter activists, Caitlyn Jenner, Vladimir Putin, and the Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani, who was a big part of this peace process and this nuclear negotiation, who is the reformer, the moderate, who was elected in Iran after Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and he ushered in this new era of attempting to negotiate and compromise and work with other countries, and including the West at large, so they considered him as well. But the bigger story here is who was left off the list. Bernie Sanders. Now, I already know a lot of you are going to say, come on, Kyle, this is your bias showing. Who are you to bring this up? I mean, what evidence is there that he should have been in the final three or whatever? Isn't it too broad of an attack, and aren't you too biased to make such a claim? The answer to that is fuck no, and I'll tell you why. Because Time had an online poll where people got to vote, their readers got to vote as to who they'd want to see be Person of the Year. How did Bernie Sanders do in that poll? He was number one. He was number one by a mile and a half. So not only did he win that and then not win the overall Time Person of the Year, which there's an argument that, you know, they could just decide to go in a different direction. That's fine. I wouldn't even necessarily criticize them if it was just a case that he won online and then he didn't win in real life. So, you know, they just made a different decision. No big deal. But at least it pay the man his dues in one way or another. And that's the problem. They didn't do that. They didn't even put him in the final eight. Okay, no, I'm not having this debate. I'm not having this discussion. This is an absurd discussion. Is there some sort of an establishment bias against Bernie Sanders? There's no question about it. There's no question about it. And this isn't the only example. I'm not pounding the gavel over this and this alone. I'm pounding the gavel over the 927 things we've discussed before on this show that in my mind prove that the establishment is going to do everything in its power to say anybody but Bernie Sanders. Whether it's CNN and their fuckery behind the scenes with the polls, how they put up the snap polls after the debates and Bernie Sanders always wins by a mile and a half, and then they pull down the polls because it doesn't show Hillary winning, and then they put it on their Facebook page and they tuck it away in a corner, and sometimes they take it off completely. And they in one case, they ended up putting something on the front page that wasn't a poll, but it looked like a poll, and it had Hillary winning. It said the CNN political prediction market or something like that. It had Hillary winning, Bernie in second, of course O'Malley in third, because shut up and move aside, O'Malley. And it looked like, if you're not going over it with a fine-tooth comb and you're not paying attention, anybody could go, oh, Hillary won. Hillary won. Now, the scientific polls are more mixed. There's no doubt about it. But there are plenty of examples of, for example, public policy polling releasing a poll where they say Hillary Clinton won the debate, no question about it. When you dig deeper, you find out that guess who funded that poll? A pro-Hillary super PAC. The fuck is – are you kidding me? So let me get this straight. Liberals understand the problem with bias if ExxonMobil funds a study on climate science and it says, hey, global warming, maybe not that big of a deal. But when you see a Hillary super PAC fund a polling agency that says, Hillary won! Would you look at that? You're not going, red flag, what's up here? What's going on? I don't understand this. Guys, Bernie Sanders takes his money from small donors. Bernie Sanders cares about poor people, middle-class people, cares about minorities, cares about the people largely left behind and marginalized in society. I mean, his average donation is very low, whereas Hillary Clinton takes a tremendous amount of her money from big money donors. Wall Street loves her. The corporations love her. The lobbyists love her. So who's she more likely to represent? Bernie says, I don't want to have a super PAC. I don't want to have Wall Street making campaign contributions because I'm not going to do anything for them. I'm elected by the people of the United States of America, not by the various special interests and the people who are going to come knocking on my door and asking me for favors on day one, like ridiculous subsidies when that money could go towards something like healthcare or education for the people. So is there some sort of an establishment bias against Bernie Sanders? Absolutely. And the thing is, guys, it's not like a conspiracy behind closed doors, smoke-filled room, twist your mustache, yada, yada. No, it's an open bias. The system is openly biased because the powers that be in our country and in our economy, the elite, the people with the money, they have people who they favor. We know who they are. Whether it's Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush on the Republican side, whether it's Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side. And so they are going to try to push a narrative through the mainstream media, through the airwaves, with ads and in other ways, to say, no, these are the serious candidates who you should consider and who you should think about. This other guy who actually looks like he gives a shit about you and wants to change things for the better, I mean, come on, he's old, right? He's old. He seems a little kooky. He's a little loud. Don't pay attention to him. Forget that. Anyway, move along here. Top person of the year? He won in the poll? No, forget that. He's not even in the top eight. Fuck that. Not even in the top eight. Angela Merkel. Let's talk about how awesome the German chancellor is. Please, let's do that right now. I see right through you. It ain't pretty. Okay. Now, I got more Bernie Sanders for you. This one is him talking about economics, which is always, always fun, always, always interesting, and in many ways enlightening. You know, Bernie knows much more about economics than a lot of the other people running, and certainly more than other politicians in the United States of America. Bernie Sanders is going to break down the issue of redistribution of wealth. He's on Rachel Maddow's show on MSNBC. Let's watch.
Our system is set up right now to concentrate wealth at the top. Redistribution doesn't just happen, right? How do you end up fixing one by addressing the other?
There hasn't been massive redistribution of wealth in this country in the last 30 years. We're talking about the top 0.1%, seeing a doubling of the percentage of wealth that they own. Trillions of dollars coming from working families going to the top. And essentially what my campaign is about is about anything. It's to say we've got to bring that money back into the middle class and working families. We have to create jobs. We have to raise wages. We have to make public colleges and universities tuition-free so kids in that community who are studying hard understand that someday they will be able to go to college. But gets back to the first point. We need a very progressive and strong agenda to bring people into the political process, because I worry very much about the future of American democracy when so many people are giving up. We got to bring them in around that agenda that says, yes, we're not going to let the United States continue to have one of the highest rates of childhood poverty in the industrialized world. Even at a time when we're seeing a proliferation of millionaires and billionaires, we have to say to the billionaire class, enough is enough. You cannot have it all. You are going to pay more in taxes. Corporations are not going to stash their money in the Cayman Islands. We are going to reinvest in America, create jobs, make education available to all.
That line at the beginning is very telling and very true. He said there has been massive redistribution of wealth for the past 30 years. And then he goes on to explain how that redistribution is from the middle class and the poor to the rich. So whenever the Republicans talk about class warfare, they're right. There is class warfare going on, but it ain't from the middle class and the poor coming after the rich with their pitchforks. It's the other way around. It's the rich rigging the system against poor people, against middle class people, and greatly increasing their share of the wealth, not by working harder. There's the key point. Now, we've discussed this graph before. It's one of the most interesting economic graphs, in the past 30 years, 40 years. And what it is it shows from about 1980 and onward, you see a divergence between productivity and income gains. So productivity steadily rises. The American people are working harder and harder, but their income gains flatten. So your wages are stagnant, you're busting your ass, and you're working harder. So, okay, what the fuck's that about? Well, some of that is because of technology, but a lot of that is because the rich are taking a much greater percentage. We've gone over the CEO statistics, the pay ratio, your average worker compared to a CEO. It used to be in the 70s and the 80s, you were talking about 25 to 1, 40 to 1. Now, that's already still a gigantic disparity. But I think most reasonable people, okay, we get it. We don't want to pay the janitor the exact same amount as the person who's running the company and works longer hours, and, you know, you go down the list of reasons why person A should be paid more than person B. We're reasonable people. 10 to 1, 25 to 1, okay, we'll shut the fuck up. You got it. But it went from that to today we're talking 300 to 1, in some cases 400 to 1. Okay, that just doesn't make any sense. So when people think, oh, well, you know, if people are doing bad, it's on them. It's always on the individual. It's some sort of moral failing. You didn't work hard enough. That there's a fundamental misunderstanding in that belief. And the misunderstanding is, hey, we already live in a meritocracy, which means the harder you work, the further you go. So if you fail, it's all on you. There's no systemic flaws. Look in the fucking mirror. But that's not true, and it's easy to disprove. I mean, for fuck's sake, if you think the United States of America is a meritocracy, or the world is a meritocracy, you haven't been fucking paying attention. Okay, how about that study that came out about a year ago, which found that the wealthiest 85 people in the world have more money than the bottom 3.5 billion. 85 people have more than 50% of the world. Did they just work that much harder? Is it even possible to work that much harder? No, it's an arbitrary system. The system is rigged in their favor. You know, wealth begets more wealth. If you're super rich, you get to pass it down to your kid, and it could be a spoiled brat and a fucking idiot, but you still got millions of dollars in the bank. Is that something that's fair? Look, all liberals want, all progressives want, is equal opportunity. That's all we want. I don't want equal outcomes. If one person actually works significantly harder than somebody else, I'm not going to say, hey, pay them exactly the same. No, I'm not arguing for that, and nobody I know of is arguing for that. Maybe a tiny, tiny percentage of people who are way out there on the fringes. But mostly what we want is equal opportunity so that we don't have an economic system where the elites and the billionaires in a 100-yard dash of life and in a 100-yard dash of our economy, they take off, they go 85 yards out in front of us, and then they turn around and go, all right, middle class and poor, you can start running now. And then when we can't win the race, they go, why are you complaining? Why are you so lazy? No, the problem is you rigged it. The problem is you bought the political system, and you get political favors and subsidies and all these things for yourself while you screw over the little guy. And oftentimes, they can't get a good education. They don't have decent health care. They don't have daycare for their kids. They're struggling to keep the fucking lights on and make a better life. All we want is equal opportunity. That's all we want. And right now we don't have it, and a guy like Bernie Sanders is at least trying to fight to get us to the point where we do have it. All right, next. Let me do the Greenpeace story now. A lot to talk about here. Greenpeace did an undercover investigation into climate science deniers and their so-called scientist buddies, and they found something that is totally unsurprising. They're corrupt. They're deeply corrupt. Quote, fossil fuel companies secretly funnel money into prominent scientists' pockets to manufacture doubt about mainstream climate science. Greenpeace UK posed as representatives of fake oil and coal companies and asked two climate change skeptics to write papers promoting the benefits of carbon dioxide and coal in developing countries. The two academics the group approached, Frank Clementi of Pennsylvania State University and William Happer of Princeton University, reportedly agreed to pen the reports and not to reveal their funding source. The group's expose follows revelations from the New York Times earlier this year that Willie Soon, a scientist at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, accepted donations from fossil fuel companies and anonymous donors to write papers that challenge the consensus on climate science without saying where his funding came from. So this is a strategy, this is a well-known strategy, and it's called the Academics for Hire tactic. And basically, it's the same strategy that was implemented by tobacco companies. When tobacco companies wanted to make the argument that, indeed, cigarettes do not cause cancer. And it's actually even more nefarious. What they do is they get creative with it. So they don't just, maybe they start out by saying, cigarettes don't cause cancer, they don't cause cancer, they don't cause cancer. But then when that becomes an untenable position and everybody's like, eh, come on, man. What they do is they move the goalposts. And then it becomes, well, we don't know. We don't know. And all we're saying is that for us to take action needs more study. It just needs more study. Just don't do anything yet. Don't change anything yet policy-wise until we study it more to get a guaranteed answer. And then lo and behold, everything they do from there on out says, whoop, we just don't know. We need more study. There's still a little bit of doubt there. And they even said it in here. They use the word doubt. The whole point of this system and of this tactic is to raise doubt, because what do the climate science deniers have to do in order to win? Just raise a doubt. That's it. That's all they have to do. In order for the people who are right, the people who believe in climate science, in order for us to win, we have to convince everybody to the point where we actually do policy legislation that passes and then gets implemented. That's a lot. To be proactive, that's a big mountain to climb. But that's what we need to do to win. In order for the deniers to win, what do they have to do? Just raise the doubt, man. Just raise it out. Oh, I mean, sure, there's some studies that say climate science is a problem and we need to act on it and we're going to increase drought and famine and sea level rise and all these issues. But some experts, some scientists, look, they have degrees. They say, no, look the other way. We're not sure if that's the case. It looks like the data may be fudged for 1998 in this little way right here, and that kind of delegitimizes the whole thing, and more study, and then maybe later on we'll address it, if need be. And then this is the result here. We don't get real, effective, efficient climate change legislation to fully move us towards green technology and begin this massive shift, and they get rich. And that's what it comes down to. These people have no ethics. Okay, they're a disgrace among the scientific community because, indeed, they're turning their backs on the scientific community. And they're doing it to get a nice, big, fat paycheck from the fossil fuel companies. And that's what it is, man. The people who are the most powerful, obviously, have the most money. And they can pay for lobbyists. They can give money to politicians in campaign contributions. And they can get a lot of what they want because they're so goddamn rich. Well, the scientific community, you know, if you're living off of tiny government grants to do your research, what are you going to do? You can't go to a politician and give them a tremendous amount of money to get your message out there, which happens to be accurate. You just got to hope that the truth, which is underfunded, the message of the truth overrides the well-funded lies. And it's time that we get past this, man, and we all understand this is real, it is man-made, and we need to fix it with legislation. And if we don't, I mean, our great-great-grandkids, boy, are they going to hate us, and boy, are they going to be right to hate us. Okay. And, of course, CNN isn't helping. Why? Because every 50-50, oh, we don't know. This guy says climate change is real. This guy says climate change isn't real. And that's what they give us. Guys, that's part of the problem. You're part of the problem if you're not calling a spade and if you're not embracing the science itself. And that's because they value neutrality over objectivity. Neutrality is to avoid cries of bias. So say everything is 50-50. Democrats are right 50% of the time. Republicans are right 50% of the time. Every debate is 50-50. And what they should do is say, no, on this one it's clear. The scientists are right. The Democrats are right. The Republicans are dead wrong. But you can't do that or what happens? Every right-wing commentator and politician in the country says, liberal bias! Oh, my God, you're liberally biased. Right. Well, the facts in this case are indeed liberally biased. What is it the kids say nowadays? Sorry, not sorry. All right, let me take a break here, and then when we come back, I'm not done yet on this issue. Ted Cruz is the chair of a fucking science committee, dude. Oh, my goodness. And he's going to invite some people to testify on this issue. and you're going to fucking facepalm. I guarantee you that. Later on, Hassan Rouhani condemns Donald Trump and goes after the United States. What did he say? Is he right or wrong? And then I got a long poll here. That sentence didn't come out right. I got a long poll. There's a very detailed, in-depth poll of the Muslim community around the world from Pew. I want to dive into this a little bit, and I want to make sense of it for you guys so you understand what makes sense in this debate. So somebody like Donald Trump is obviously a bigot, and we need to call him a bigot. But does that mean that there's nothing to criticize in Islam because he goes after Muslims in an unfair way? Of course not. That's ridiculous. There's a nuanced answer here, and we're going to get to that. And then we got much more later on as well. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show.
Bye-bye.
Son of a bitch. All right, y'all. Ted Cruz. Gonna make you facepalm. Ted Cruz is the chair of the Senate Subcommittee on Space, Science, and Competitiveness, which is one of the most random subcommittee names I've ever heard in my life. But also, can we stop and reflect on the fact that Ted fucking Cruz is the head of a science committee? What's this world coming to? So he scheduled a hearing for December 8th where he wants to have experts talk about the issue of climate change. So who did he invite to speak? A man named Mark Stein. Now, I don't think I've heard this name before until today, but according to Media Matters, Mark Stein is famous from being, quote, a frequent Rush Limbaugh show guest host. So Ted Cruz is leading a science committee, vomit, and he's inviting right-wing talk radio fill-in hosts to testify on science matters. Double vomit, quadruple vomit, contemplating suicide vomit. That's unbelievable! That's unbelievable. So, naturally, you could be thinking right now, yeah, whatever, okay, so he does that, but, you know, maybe he has a science background. Is this guy a scientist? Nope. Does he have any expertise in this field? No. So why did Ted Cruz pick him to come and talk to this Congressional Committee on Climate Change? Because he's a hack and he's an ideologue. So Media Matters reports on this guy, quote, Stein has a long history of making extreme and scientifically illiterate claims that could give Cruz a run for his money. For instance, Stein alleges in 2009 that there has been no global warming this century. In 2010, he declared that environmentalism is fundamentally anti-human, of course. And most recently, Stein was seen proclaiming that Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders' remarks describing the link between climate change and terrorism were insane, and even imagining terrorists, quote, sawing Bernie Sanders' head off. This is the government of the United States of America, a science committee, a subcommittee on science. This is Congress. They're like, bring in the fill-in talk radio hosts. Bring in the Rush Limbaugh guy. Bring in the guy who's a conspiracy theorist who makes shit up about how the fossil fuel industry is right about everything and the scientists are the greedy ones who want all the money. Bring in that guy to talk about science. My question to you guys is, how the fuck are we gonna get to a point where we're really addressing these issues in a substantive way when we're at the bottom of the bottom here? We can't get any lower than we are right now. Ted Cruz is the head of a science committee. And he's inviting in some guy who's a fucking jackass right-wing talker who knows nothing about science to be an expert on science. God, I can't take it, man. I can't take it. We got to get the money out of the political system so that we don't have the corporate puppets in these positions of power. Because that's what's happening here. I mean, the Republicans take ungodly amounts of money from the fossil fuel industry. So what are they going to do? They're going to push their agenda. And their agenda is no green technology, no climate change legislation, because we have to squeeze out every last dime from our product. So give us subsidies, suppress all that other stuff, and oh yeah, in order to do this, you have to pretend like climate change isn't real. So our Congress is totally corrupt. They're bought. They're bribed. They're doing the bidding of corporations, and in this case, the fossil fuel industry. And that's how we've gotten to this point, where Ted Cruz is the head of the science committee. The head of the science committee knows nothing about science. Guys, have you ever stopped and thought about it? Why is it that Democratic leaders are always wimpy? And why is it that Republican leaders are always fucking like caged up lions just waiting to lash out? Look at like John Boehner was Speaker of the House. You know, brazen, obnoxious, alcoholic. No, I'm right. I'm going to tell you why I'm right. That's John Boehner. And who was the head of the Democrats? Harry Reid.
Excuse me, I would like to disagree with you on this one little part, maybe, but I'm willing to compromise and negotiate, and here, you can have what you want in legislation.
Why is that? Have you stopped to think about that? The Democratic leaders are always weak. And the Republican leaders are like, well, we will crush you, repeal Obamacare 60 times. Yeah! Hulkamania, yeah! That's because they're paid to be like that. So the big moneyed interests want the weak Democrats to rise to the top. The big moneyed interests want the strong Republicans to rise to the top. Why? Because their agenda lines up more with the Republicans. Because they're rich, they want to stay rich, they want low taxes, they want subsidies, they want to rig the government in their favor. So you fund the strong Republicans to run roughshod over the weak Democrats, and we're left at this place right here. Change it. We have to get the money out of the political system. We have to have politicians that represent the people, and we have to get what we need and what we want, which is a government that takes serious problems like climate change to heart, and they do something about it. You got to get on board with Move to Amend, or you got to get on board with Wolfpack, and we got to try to get this amendment, because unless and until we do, we're going to have an endless line of Ted Cruz's to lead science committees. Okay. All right, now we go to Donald Trump. Talk about the backlash from his comments. Apparently, people in the UK are fed up with Donald Trump's bigotry, so they created a petition to ban him. Vice News reports, quote, by Wednesday morning, around six people a second were signing the government petition to ban Trump for hate speech. The government must respond to any petition that gains more than 10,000 signatures, and when one gains more than 100,000 signatures, which the Trump petition reached just after midday within 22 hours of being posted, it is considered for debate in Parliament. So the list is tremendous, and it's growing by the second, and I think this is a horrible thing. Now, I need everybody to understand exactly what I'm saying here. I was, I think, one of the first to not only condemn Donald Trump, but I did it in detail. I explained why what he was saying is stupid, and let's be crystal clear about what he actually said. He did say, ban all Muslims from entering the U.S. People thought, oh, it was just about immigration. That's actually not clear. It's not only about immigration, but it also looks like it may be about, hey, if there were Muslim Americans on vacation and then they're coming back, nope, you're going to have to leave. Ban all Muslims from entering the U.S. Then he flirted with the idea of Japanese internment camps in an interview with George Stephanopoulos, where Stephanopoulos was like, are you fucking serious? You're flirting with internment camps? And he's like, are you saying that? Trump's like, no, I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that thing that FDR did, and everybody loves FDR, we might have to do that. And Stephanopoulos is like, right, internment camps. He's like, yeah, no. I mean, everybody loves FDR. They didn't love him for that. That was the worst part. That was the stain on his otherwise pristine record. The New Deal is why they loved him. Ending the Depression is why they loved him. Caring about the middle class and the poor, that's why they loved him. Not that. That's bad. That's bad. So he is clearly a bigot. He's anti-Muslim, which is irrational in my view. Now, I'm an atheist. I disagree with all religions and religious doctrine. I think they're dogmatic and stupid. So I'm anti-Islam, the doctrine of Islam. I think that makes sense. But Donald Trump is clearly anti all Muslims, and that's bigoted. So I'm 100% against him. But that doesn't mean that you respond by saying, now we're going to do a ban of our own. Ban him. I don't think people... It appears to me that people, even otherwise well-meaning people, they don't really get that free speech and free expression principle. It's a value. It's inexorable. It's concrete. You don't just willy-nilly like, I believe in free speech until I'm offended and until I don't like the thing being said, and then I'm done with it, and I'm going to get rid of it. Well, no, if you don't believe in free speech for those you disagree with the most, you don't believe in it at all. And I don't want – that's not my quote, to be clear here. There's, I think Voltaire said it at one time. Chomsky said it at one time. You know, many people before me have pointed that out. But it's true. And to defend somebody's right to say X is not defending X. You can disagree with X, but defend somebody's right to say X. You know, it's the same thing I always bring up in the U.S. Granted, I know it's a different country. They have a different context. But in the U.S., the ACLU defended the KKK when the KKK said, we want to do a march through a minority community, whether it was a Jewish town or a black town. I always forget. It's one of the two. And the ACLU was like, look, man, if it's peaceful, they have a right to do it. We're going to defend them in court. Everybody says, oh, ACLU, liberal organization. They're not a liberal organization. They're a principled organization. They care about constitutional rights, and they're not fucking around about them. They care about them deeply to their core, to the point where they'll defend people who are grotesque. That's what I'm doing today. I'm defending Donald Trump, who's a grotesque human being, who's a bad person. But you have to believe, guys, this isn't, to me, this is serious. This isn't, you know, willy-nilly, hey, I like free speech, but. No, I like free speech, but is the new I'm not racist, but, you know, and again, I'm giving credit to everybody here. I didn't come up with that quote. That was the amazing atheist, TJ, who came up with that quote, and he's totally right about that. You know, this is, Donald Trump is a bad guy. Donald Trump is a bigot. Donald Trump is a dunce. He's a stupid person. I could go on and on here. I dislike him. Look at the entire video history of Secular Talk on Donald Trump. But you don't combat his stupidity by censoring and shutting down and banning. Because if anything, the message you're sending is, in the realm of ideas, I'm too weak to even engage. Well, no, I'm not too weak to engage. I'd let him in and then I'd fucking crush him in a debate because I have logic and rationality on my side and he is a stupid bigot. Let him in. Don't ban him. All right, more. I'm fucking cruising here, bro. All right, let me get to Sandra Ruani here, who I think most of my audience knows, but many people don't. If you're not a political junkie, you probably don't know. I think the world would be surprised to see just how much your average American doesn't know about politics. I think my audience knows who Sandra Ruani is, but not a lot of Americans. Huh? Some Americans don't even know who the fucking vice president is. Good googly moogly. All right, here we go. Hassan Rouhani, who is, of course, the president of Iran and a Shia Muslim, criticized Donald Trump for his proposed ban on all Muslims entering America. He said, quote, under the pretext of fighting terrorism, some people are proposing that Muslims should not be permitted to enter other countries. We regret such remarks about Muslims. This is while they themselves are among the sponsors and supporters of terrorism, and they are supporting terrorists. That last part there, he's speaking about America. So what's he referring to? He's talking about Syria. And he's kind of right. Now understand, Hassan Rouhani is not Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who was a dunce and a far right winger and a crazy person. And he was just stupid. Hassan Rouhani is the reformer. He's a moderate. Now, he's a cleric, but he was the most moderate of all the choices in the Iranian election. And it's not just like, oh, I'm just saying he's a moderate. No, he actually is a moderate. Okay, and he was one of the people that was instrumental in getting the deal between the U.S. and Iran, the nuclear deal. And apparently, behind the scenes, he worked hard to get this done because the Ayatollah is a prick, and a lot of people behind the scenes in Iran, unsurprisingly, are conservative. So he's not a horrible dude, man. And remember, the government of Iran, for all their flaws, and they have many, they're currently fighting ISIS. So at least in that sense, they should be an ally to the U.S. And let's not forget that, you know, compared to Saudi Arabia, Iran looks like a fucking positively flourishing Western secular democracy. So let's also keep that in mind. How funny it is that, you know, in the U.S. we're like, oh my God, the Muslims are so bad. Well, then why are you aligned with the worst of the worst in terms of you're aligned with the Wahhabi state, which is the most right-wing fundamentalist version of Islam? Again, Iran is a theocracy, but the Shia have an interesting philosophy where they kind of cheat a little bit here and there. Well, we're not sure when the next imam is going to come back. So what we're going to do is we're not going to try to implement Islamic law until that imam comes back. So now we get to live more secular. That's what a lot of Shias believe. Now, again, the regime in Iran is, they're a hardline regime, so it's a little different, and they are more conservative. But still, all things considered, they're not nearly as conservative as Saudi Arabia, and they're fighting ISIS. So he's referring to Syria, and what he's talking about is the fact that we are backing rebels in Syria who are fighting Assad. Now, Assad is an Alawite. It's a Shia offshoot. But Assad runs what is a secular socialist government in Syria. Now, he's got many problems, and he's done many fucked up things, no doubt about that. We've spoken about that on the show before. But the U.S. backing the rebels, what people don't understand is that all the so-called moderate rebels are gonzo. Okay, a lot of them fled to Turkey, a lot of them fled to Europe, and there's like 8 remaining FSA, Free Syrian Army dudes, those are supposedly the moderate ones. And then who are the biggest force fighting in there? Jihadists and Islamists. So you have al-Nusra Front, which is the al-Qaeda offshoot, the affiliate in Syria. And you have ISIS in Syria, fighting the Assad regime. So when he says, you know, oh, it's ironic that you have somebody like Donald Trump, ban all Muslims! But meanwhile, the government of the U.S. is like, anyway, can we go give arms to more Islamists and possibly jihadists in Syria to topple Assad? Because we don't like Assad, because Assad is backed by Russia, who we really don't like, and Iran. He ain't wrong, dude. He ain't wrong. Now, I've said, I got, what's the saying? No dog in that race, no dog in that fight. Whatever, no horse in that race, whatever. You know what I'm saying. In Syria. So I would stay out. You know, the official government position in the U.S. is we hate both sides, which is why we're involved in attacking both sides and arming some people on the rebel side. It just gets weird, man. You know, with, oh, there's no good outcome here, so let's get involved. What the fuck? No, I thought you don't like either side, so what are you doing? That doesn't make any sense. But that's the point. The point is, it's hilarious that somebody like Donald Trump is like, keep out all Muslims. All Muslims are bad. And then the U.S. government official policy is, let's arm some Islamist rebels to fight Assad, and also let's be buddy-buddy with Saudi Arabia and get the oil cum shot on our face, get the money shot on our face. Oh, yeah, we love your oil. Did you behead people for sorcery and apostasy today? Did you behead people for adultery like you do all the time? Over 150 people beheaded or killed in Saudi Arabia just this year, death sentence, for all types of stupid shit, drug smuggling, sorcery, witchcraft. We're like, yeah, we hate Muslims, unless it's the people who believe in Wahhabism, which is the worst strain of Islam, then we love you. So is Hassan Rouhani wrong to point this out, to point out this hypocrisy? No, he's 100% right. I get it, everybody gets it. It is funny that, you know, you have somebody who's involved in a horrific government. Iran is a theocracy, and I'm not giving them a pass on their human rights abuses, and there are many. So there's that level of hypocrisy on his side, at least. But he's right in the hypocrisy he's pointing out in the U.S., that it makes no sense to ban all Muslims like Trump did, and then meanwhile the establishment gleefully supports Salafists all around the world. Okay. God damn it! I was going to do the poll on Islam and Muslims. I'm going to have to wait until after the break here because I only have 5 or 6 minutes here before the next break. So let me jump ahead for a second, and I'll go to Brian Fisher, who speaks about something similar. And then when we come back, I'll do that poll, and then I'll do Spike Lee and Chris Hayes go at it, which is interesting. Alex Jones did a hilarious rant. The claims he makes are always adorable. And then later on, the last story of the day most likely will be the Yale professor who was fired for daring to say, you know, I kind of believe that people have the right to offend and free expression is important. Or she wasn't fired. That's not fair. She stepped down. But she stepped down because of protests and because people were all up in her face about it. So, all right. Anywho, here we go to Brian Fisher. Right-wing radio host Brian Fisher not only agrees with Trump that we should keep Muslims out of America, all Muslims, no Muslims can enter the U.S., he wants to pay Muslim Americans who are already here to leave for good.
You know, and I feel that ought to be a part of our immigration policy. Let's use American resources to help these people find a home in the Muslim world. I agree with Janet. In fact, Norway is now doing that. I mean, I've been calling for this for years. In fact, I was in the same piece that Right Wing Watch talked about. I suggested that we assist Muslims in America with repatriation costs. Let's help them find a home in the Muslim world. They can live in a place that shares their values, that shares their religious principles, that shares their religious practice, that shares their cultural customs. They can be at home. Don't have to chafe against our liberty. Don't have to chafe against our Judeo-Christian value system. They can be at home. And I believe we ought to be content to use our resources to help them get there.
That's hilarious. Anybody who knows the body of Brian Fisher's work understands that he is a guy who has openly called for Christian theocracy in America. He's gone as far as to say freedom of religion only applies to Christians, so it only means you have a right to be Christian, which is ridiculous because that's the exact opposite of what it really means. So he's a guy who's at odds with American values and the Constitution. As he's accusing American Muslims of being against it, he's the one that's against it. It's pure projection. And what these people don't understand is that Muslim Americans are American. They really do believe that, you know, it only really applies to white Protestant Christians, and everybody else is just visiting, and we get to kick them the fuck out whenever we want. But that's not true. You made that up. You made that up. In fact, the Muslim American community, okay, so specifically Muslims who are American, have been here, raised here, and they're wholly American. The Muslim American community is far more liberal than Brian Fisher. So let me give you a few examples here. Gallup found that 78% of Muslim Americans believe violence which kills civilians is never justified. Never. For the Christian community, what percentage was it? 39%. If I'm using Brian Fisher's logic, these guys aren't even against killing innocent civilians in all cases? I don't know, man. Perhaps we should stop all Christian immigration to the U.S., and perhaps we should consider deporting, getting some Christians out of here, paying them to go back to go elsewhere, as long as it's not here, go be amongst, you know, other people who think like you and are okay with killing civilians. No, but see, that logic would be absurd, right? No, it is absurd. That's the point. Next, 59% of white evangelical Christians backed CIA torture. That's more than any other group in America. Any other group. 59% of evangelical Christians were pro-torture. Atheists were less. Muslims were less. So, hey man, look, that's un-American. We have a ban in the Constitution on cruel and unusual punishment. Round up that 59%, ship them out. Go somewhere where they're more comfortable with, you know, being open about their torture. Hey, I'm just proposing the exact same fucking thing that he proposed. I don't know, they're not really all that American, are they? We should probably kick them out. They're Muslim, I mean, come on. No. The reality is, there are plenty of Americans who have grotesque beliefs of all different backgrounds. There are plenty of Americans with great beliefs of all different backgrounds. We have a constitution. We have rule of law. If you're American, you're American. Okay? It's as simple as that. If you commit a crime, we're going to put you in jail. And, you know, we apply justice or do our best to apply justice. But this idea that you go around and round up people that you dislike and pay them to get out of the country, or you reject an entire religion of people from entering the country, even if these are people who are fleeing ISIS or jihadists, who in their mind are people who are the extremists in their own faith who have perverted their faith. No, that doesn't make you a good guy, Brian. That makes you a bad guy. Okay. Let me take a break. When I come back, I'm going to do that very long and interesting poll on Muslim and Islam, Muslims and Islam. This is from Pew. We're going to discuss that. Then we'll get into a whole bunch of other stuff, including Alex Jones. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
I want it all. I want it all. And I want it now.
son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys. So Pew Research re-released a poll on Muslims and Islam. I think they originally did this in 2013 or 2014. And I want to go over the findings with you because I think this is very relevant to the current political debate that's happening in the country. So the other day, Donald Trump said that we should ban all Muslims from entering the U.S. Obviously bigoted. He is a bigot, and it's a terrible policy position. I mean, if he's, oh my God, I'm so scared of ISIS. Yeah, but Shia Muslims are fighting ISIS. ISIS wants to kill all the Shias. The Kurds, who are Sunni, are fighting ISIS, who are Salafi Sunnis. You have Sufi Muslims, who want nothing to do with jihad of any kind whatsoever. You have Ahmadiyya Muslims, who are incredibly moderate. This idea, ban all of them, it doesn't make any sense. But most of the people fighting ISIS right now are other Muslims, so it is a bigoted position. And it's fair to say that Donald Trump is somebody who has serious mental deficiencies. He's just not getting it, and he is generalizing, and that's something that we should all oppose. So we need to make a distinction, though, between attacking Muslims, people, okay? Muslims are people. So Donald Trump is doing that versus something like attacking Islam, which is a doctrine, which is a set of beliefs, and it's a holy book, and it's an ideology. That's not the same thing. So I think it's fair to say if you generalize about Muslims, if you go after Muslims broadly speaking, chances are you could be a bigot. Donald Trump is that. But if you go after Islam, the doctrine, you just disagree with Islam. In the same way anybody would disagree with Christianity or Buddhism or Hinduism, somebody might slam the Bhagavad Gita. Does that make them a bigot? No. On the contrary, it probably makes them logical and accurate and rational in their disagreeing with old school absurd myths. Same thing with the Quran, it gets no special treatment. Okay, so there's a distinction to be made here. Now, first let's go into this issue of Sharia law. For everybody listening on the live show and you can't see the chart here, these are disturbing numbers. It says many back Sharia as official law. This is the median percentage of Muslims who favor enshrining Sharia. In South Asia, it's 84%. So we're talking there about places like Pakistan and Afghanistan, to name a few. In Southeast Asia, it's 77%. In the Middle East and North Africa, it's 74%. In Sub-Saharan Africa, it's 64%. And then the biggest drop-off, you have Southern and Eastern Europe, 18%, the small Muslim communities there. And in Central Asia, it's 12%. But no doubt, man, these are troubling numbers, because what that means is 84% of Muslims in South Asia are in favor of theocracy. 77% in Southeast Asia, they're in favor of theocracy. This is a theocratic position, and people who are secular liberals are by definition against theocracy, because theocracy is an attempt to take religious law and put it on to everybody. Pew goes on to say, quote, overwhelming percentages of Muslims in many countries want Islamic law, Sharia, to be the official law of the land. Moreover, Muslims are not equally comfortable with all aspects of Sharia. While most favor using religious law in family and property disputes, fewer support the application of severe punishments, such as whippings or cutting off hands in criminal cases. The survey also shows that Muslims differ widely in how they interpret certain aspects of Sharia, including whether divorce and family planning are morally acceptable. Now, it gets weird because at other parts of the poll, they also say that they believe in democracy and religious freedom. So, wait. You say you believe in theocracy, Sharia, in overwhelming numbers, but then in other parts, like, yeah, we believe in democracy, though, too. No, that's a contradiction. You can't have it both ways. You have to pick one or the other. And then also strong majorities say that suicide bombing is never justified. So these are, you know, this is Pew giving their caveats and their hedges, and they're saying it's a little more complex than it appears at face value because people use different interpretations of Sharia. Now, either way, You shouldn't fucking believe in Sharia. Even if you're a Muslim, you can be a secular Muslim and not believe in theocracy. Theocracy is religious law, and by definition, you are oppressing others if you make them live under Sharia. Guys, even if it's other Muslims, you're oppressing them if you say, I am going to implement my interpretation of Sharia. Well, what if there's another Muslim who says, it's a gay Muslim, for example. They're like, I just don't know. I don't agree. I don't think I should be oppressed because I'm gay and I'm a Muslim and I'm living under this system. So what do you do in that situation? I mean, the only logical thing to do, even if you are a Muslim, is to say, we got to throw out Sharia because there's different interpretations of the religion from within the religion. So if one person says, I'm the only one that has the right interpretation, that person is a fundamentalist, that person is a literalist, and that person shouldn't be in control of society. Guys, you got to understand, secularism is the compromise. I've spoken about this before. Secularism is everybody do whatever they want, and nobody can take their religious law and force it on other people through the government. So it is the compromise, it is the middle ground, it is being neutral. Because what you're saying is, okay, so you want to be a Muslim, sir? Go right ahead. You want to be a Christian, sir? You want to be a Buddhist? You want to be a Hindu? You want to be agnostic? You want to be atheist? You can be whatever the fuck you want to be. As long as you don't take your interpretation of your doctrine and belief system and say, I'm going to force it on everybody through the government. You have the freedom to believe whatever the fuck you want to believe, but once you force it on other people, oh, fuck no. Now we have our disagreement, and now's where everybody's going to say, fall back, son. All right, so they say they strongly believe in Sharia, but not everybody is 100% clear on what's in Sharia. But let's get more specific here, because there are absolutely troubling things. So let's go to the issue of atheists. They say, is it necessary to believe in God to be a moral person? Look at those fucking numbers. 94% of Muslims in Southeast Asia say, by definition, you are an immoral person if you're an atheist, if you don't believe in God. 91% in the Middle East and North Africa, 87% in South Asia, 70% in Sub-Saharan Africa, 69% in Central Asia. In Southern and Eastern Europe, 61%. Now, to be fair, the numbers are really shitty for the U.S. as well. I don't think it's as bad, and for Christians, I don't think it's as bad, but it's still bad. And the takeaway is, there's one remaining group that everybody's cool with being a bigot against, atheists. If you're an atheist, you have virtually nobody is defending you. And people are saying, in overwhelming numbers, no, by definition, you are immoral because you don't believe. Guys, if somebody's an atheist, that doesn't link up with, it's not the same thing as saying, I am immoral. I don't have a code by which I make moral decisions. That's not the case. And again, the irony of it all is you have atheists who are more likely, when they're asked by pollsters what they believe, they're more likely to be people who fall in line with the doctrine of peaceful Jesus in his hippie phase, where he's like, treat other people good, bro, care about the poor, like, don't hurt people, stuff like that. That's more atheists believe in that than Christians believe in that, and obviously than Muslims believe in that. And guys, for me to point this out, this isn't bigoted against Muslims. This is me quite literally pointing out that according to them, an overwhelming majority in these areas are bigoted against atheists. This is anti-atheist bigotry. That's not okay. It's not okay to just say, well, they're all bad. That's just as wrong as people saying all Muslims are bad everywhere in the world. And again, let's be clear, in the U.S., the American Muslim community would not, they do not have numbers that are this bad. But this is inexcusable no matter how you slice it or dice it. Atheists are the punching bag of the world. Okay, whatever. I'm going to say by definition you are immoral because you're an atheist. All right, next. More specifics. This is, so again, you say, well, Muslims say they believe in Sharia, but, you know, that doesn't mean that they believe in all the specifics. Well, here they asked this specific question. Stoning as punishment for adultery. Oh, boy. Now, you see, in Southern and Eastern Europe, it's one case. Those numbers are still too high, by the way. Russia, 26%. Kosovo, 25%. Albania, 25%. Bosnia, 21%. Central Asia, the numbers tick up a little bit even more. Tajikistan, 51%. You go down the line there, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Turkey. In Turkey, it's 29%. That's still way too high, and Turkey is one of the more secular Muslim nations. Then you go to Malaysia, Thailand, and Indonesia, 60%, 51%, 48%. Pakistan, Afghanistan, Bangladesh, 89% in Pakistan say stone people for adultery, 85% in Afghanistan, 55% in Bangladesh. In the Palestinian territories, 84%, Egypt, 81%, Jordan, 67%, Iraq, 58%, Lebanon and Tunisia, 46% and 44%. Guys, this is not, that's not okay. That's not okay. It's not okay. Okay, it's just my belief, bro. Don't come after me for my beliefs. All I'm saying is that if somebody else does adultery, we should stone them to death. No, but that's not a defensible position. I mean, it's not even illegal in the West to do that. People might look down on you and stuff, but it's not even illegal. Why? Because it's none of your fucking business. That's why. How is that moral? Wouldn't any rational person say, yeah, okay, whatever, maybe it was a bad thing that you cheated and that you did adultery. But you know what would be more immoral than that? If we fucking throw stones at your face until you die in response to it. You don't think that would be more immoral? But that's the thing, at least for these numbers here that we just went over. Those are people who were raised in a context where they were, you know, told, no, that is immoral, and they were taught that based on religion, and so they go, well, I guess got to be true. My parents are good people. They told me that this is the case, and, you know, since they're good people, why would they lie to me? They love me. They just raised me to believe what's right. So, no, that is the right thing to do. So it is the religious doctrine itself that can, make people, whether it's the Quran or the Hadith or the Bible or any other, it can make people believe that incredibly immoral things are the moral thing to do. Well, I'm here to tell you it's bullshit. It's immoral. Your innate sense is more accurate than the nonsense you were taught from primitive desert books filled with savagery and nonsense and fairy tales. It's Mother Goose. It's Narnia. Do you know what's in your books? I mean, for fuck's sake, in the Bible, they allude to the earth being flat. They have seven-headed dragons in there. They say it's an abomination to wear a mix of two different fabrics. You're not allowed to work on Sunday. You can't eat pork or shellfish. Nonsense! In the Quran, Muhammad flies on a winged donkey. That's absurd and stupid. There are bright yellow cows in the Quran. They say Christians, given enough time, they become pigs. Or was that Jews who become pigs? And atheists are deaf, dumb, and blind. Hello, I'm an atheist. Am I deaf, dumb, and blind? No, I'm right here. I'm not deaf, dumb, and blind, so it's not true, it's not correct, it's inaccurate, is what I'm trying to point out. Never mind all the contradictions, but people believe it because they were taught it based on a fucking fairy tale book full of myths. We got to bust that up, and that's the point, guys. I'm arguing against the ideology. I'm arguing against the doctrine. That's accuracy. That's not bigotry. It's only bigotry if you're anti-Muslim as people. I'm not against the people. I'm against the doctrine. I'm against the ideas. And some people say, they think they're cute, and they're like, well, that's no different than when the Christians say, I'm against the sin but not the sinner, when it comes to gay people, for example. No, it's totally different, because being gay is a sexual orientation, something that the person cannot help. It just is who they are. When it comes to believing in doctrine, that's an idea. It's a concept where if they were taught it, they can be untaught it. And we can tell them it's wrong, and we can convince them, given enough time and effort. So it's not the same thing. You can be anti-Islamic doctrine, but not anti-Muslim as people, and I am. Somebody like Donald Trump is a bigot. He's anti-Muslim, period. Somebody like me is accurate to be anti-Islamic doctrine because it's not true, but not anti-Muslim. All right, more. So, I need everybody to understand. And this isn't, you got to understand, man, I'm against all irrational dogmatic beliefs. So 57% of Republicans, for example, want to dismantle the Constitution and put in biblical law. 57%. Okay, that's fucking stupid. I'm against that as well, and I will rant and rave against that because it's dumb, because it's dumb. And also 47% of Christians in the U.S. think that Jesus is coming back soon. Well, that's another thing I'm going to argue against, because that also has negative consequences. Like, for example, when you talk to these people like John Hagee, Michelle Bachmann, they'll tell you we're in favor of letting Israel and Netanyahu take over all the land and oppress the Palestinians, because in the Bible, Israel has to have all the land in order for Jesus to come back in end times. So they're okay with oppressing Palestinians because of their religious beliefs, which say that all the land is Israel's and the Palestinians got to get out of the way. The real-world consequences to bad beliefs, that's also something that we need to oppose. And there's a grain of truth in the argument that Donald Trump and the bigots on the right are becoming more popular because liberals, in some cases, are blurring the distinction between Islam and Muslims. And bottom line is this, guys. If you protect both, you're making a mistake, and you are empowering crazy people on the right to become more popular. So the right thing to do is not to take the Republican position, or the far right position, I should say, which is Islam bad, Muslims bad. That's their position. You don't take the opposite, which is Muslims good, Islam good. What's the real answer? Muslims good, Islam, the doctrine, bad. So we need to stop blurring that line and saying, you know, hey, you're anti-Islam, that makes you bigoted. No, being anti-Muslim makes you bigoted. Being anti-Islam makes you accurate, because you're talking about how the doctrine is not true and potentially very, very dangerous, and these poll numbers prove it. And then the final thing I want to mention is, guys, don't get it twisted. This is not an either-or. So a lot of people like to make a false choice out of this, and they say to you, either you can attack this, Muslim fundamentalism, or American imperialism. You can't attack both. To which I say, that's fucking ridiculous. Of course I can attack both. So I can be against Islamic fundamentalism, and I am. I hate all these poll numbers. I can be against Christian fundamentalism, and I am. I'm totally against that. And I can also be against state terrorism, if you will, American imperialism. So I'm against these numbers, and I'm also against Israeli apartheid and Netanyahu blocking a two-state solution and the oppression of the Palestinians. Totally against that. I'm against the war in Iraq, which broke the region and made the Salafist extreme Islamic ideology more popular. I'm against that as well. I'm against our 900 military bases around the world, which further inflame tensions with Muslims. I'm against torture, which is a great recruitment tool for jihadists. I'm against Guantanamo Bay, which is an extrajudicial prison, which is against our values. I'm against support for the Saudi Arabian government, which is a Salafist terror state. So you can be against both things at the same time, which is why it's okay. You have permission to enjoy the work of Noam Chomsky, Glenn Greenwald, and yes, Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris. There's no contradiction there. A lot of people want to make you believe there is a contradiction. Pick a side! Pick a side! But no, the answer is to be against all religious extremism and fundamentalism and acknowledge the problem and argue against the ideology. And you can also argue against the obvious problem with American imperialism and state terrorism. That was a long-ass segment. All right, I got to speed up now. Spike Lee sat down for an interview with Chris Hayes about his newest project, Chirac, and there was a tense moment where he kind of went off.
The last 2 years of Black Lives Matter protests, one of the things we hear all the time is black-on-black crime. You guys are pushing because, a cop shot this young black man, but young black men kill young black men all the time, and there's a sense in which I think people feel like that is a disingenuous misdirection on the part of some people, not everyone, obviously. First of all, people look at my body of work. I'm the director of the main Do the Right Thing, Malcolm X, and I can go off another 3 hours. So look at the body of work. I not get up just a turn-up truck.
No, I'm too.
I'm not kidding. Let me finish. Sir, it doesn't matter to me what color, what complexion, the
pulls the trigger. As artists,
right,
I'm going to look at it and look at it both sides. There's a specific scene where Samuel Jackson talks about it, where he's in the middle, there's a gangbanger on one side and Chicago cop on the other. If you're a parent, when your child got killed by a gangbanger or a cop, you still feel the same. Your child is dead, and your child is never coming back to you forever, and for the rest of your life, you're going to have a hole in your soul. So it doesn't matter. I'm not going to get about it. It doesn't matter to me.
Okay, do you understand what he's saying? He's saying, I'm going to talk about all of the things that are killing young black people, not just cops. So, wait a second here. The far right always tells me, the problem with Black Lives Matter people, the problem with black activists is that they never condemn black on black crime. It's only going after the white establishment. That's the problem with them. But wait a second, here's a clear example. Somebody the far right hates, Spike Lee, they can't stand him. And he's like, no, I care about all of the damage being done against black people in America. He cares about it all. So let me ask the far right here. Are you guys going to stop your goofy talking point now that blacks don't care about black-on-black crime and they only care about it when the cops attack black people? No, you're not. There's a clear example of him addressing the very thing that you say you want them to address, and then you're going to continue to make that same hacky point. Black activists don't care when black people kill black people. It's only when white people kill black people. That's not true. You made it up. Who are the people talking about the solutions for all of these problems? Who are the people? The same activists, the same liberal activists that you berate on a daily basis. Because think about it. What's the real answer in order to stop this? We already know we've gone over Campaign Zero to stop police brutality. But what are the same activists pushing for? For example, ending the drug war. Why? Because if you end the drug war, there's going to be a tremendous drop in crime. How do we know that? Prohibition of alcohol. When we had prohibition, the mafia got incredibly powerful, and there was a spike in crime because people solved disputes with guns in the street. Now it's the same thing with the drug cartels. You ban drugs, push them underground. By definition, only criminals are engaged in the drug market. So what's going to happen? Whenever there's a dispute, there's going to be shootouts. There's going to be drug gangs. So it's the liberal activists who say, end the drug war, legalize, tax, and regulate, and fix the problem. And then what does the right say? Why do you not care about it whenever there's black-on-black crime? But that's what they're talking about. They're trying to fix that by doing the right policy solutions. See, what's really happening is the far right is trying to use that as an excuse to say, don't look at the cops, don't look at the establishment, don't try to fix systemic problems, don't look at it, blame black people. Black people's fault. When they're talking about solutions for everything, Spike Lee's mad at both, as you can clearly see, black-on-black crime and violence from cops against black people. That's the answer. Another answer they're always pushing for is anti-poverty programs to give people an equal opportunity. Now, you guys can continue to pretend that black activists and liberal activists don't care about it when it's black-on-black crime, or you can be honest and admit that they do, and you just ain't fucking listening. All right, next. Alex Jones did a hilarious rant where he does his usual self-aggrandizement, and then it gets creepy.
And so, you need to understand, it's not just Alex Jones out here fighting these people. There are a lot of other folks fighting them as well. But the fact that our audience, let's not exaggerate, has doubled in the last 3-4 months, and now it's starting to exponentially increase. They're ever going to come after me, it's probably right now. Because we're just turbo exploding. Hey, blow me up, baby. You'll just light fires even bigger. I know what waters these trees. And if I could be smart enough, like Obi-Wan Kenobi, not to strike it you down and let you just cut me down. You know?
It's fucking choppy. Let me give it a second here. Just as it's getting good and he's getting more and more crazy.
Because All I want is to beat you. I'm not afraid one bit of dying or being thrown in your dungeons because I'm not a coward like you. I don't come from bottom-feeding trash like you. I'm not afraid. All I'm afraid of is failing. All I'm afraid of is bowing down to you murdering trash. All I got to think about is those hundreds of thousands of Christians that you raped and murdered with the jihad armies they put into Syria to slaughter that peaceful country and overturn it where people lived in peace. All I think about is what type of government do we have that engages in these forms of incredible evil? You baby-harvesting demon maggots! I'll never back down. I'll never bow to you. I'll be free till the day I stop sucking air into my lungs. And all the ideas I put out and all the freedom and all the Americana I've spewed out against you will never die. It'll never stop, and you know it. I told the globalists a long time ago, in a minute, you want to fight, you better believe you've got one. There are people all over this country engaging in the information war. We're going to smash your system. We're going to return the republic. We'll never be perfect, but my God, we're not going to keep babies alive and harvest their organs. We're not going to sell their parts for women's cosmetics. We're not going to have Pepsi with baby flavoring in it. I mean, what the hell have we become? Excuse me, but I'm tired of it.
I got to give him one thing. He is fucking entertaining. My favorite part of at the end is when he's already said a ridiculous number of things loudly, aggressively, and he's like, I'm tired of it! Excuse me, but I am tired of it. Random, you know, show of courtesy at the end of that. Dude, look at that stuff he said! Is it baby harvesting demon maggots? That, ladies and gentlemen, sounds like the name of an awesome band. Baby harvesting demon maggots. Look, on a serious note here, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? What are you talking about? See, Alex Jones is a hilarious character because, like, 30-40% of the time he'll talk, and I'm like, he's totally right. Like, NSA spying, oh my God, that's a tremendous problem. Your rights are being taken away. There's no more due process of law. American imperialism is horrible. We're on all these different countries. We need to oppose this. You're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And typically what he does is he builds it up. And then he'll hit you out of the blue with, like, and you know that the elites are all marrying horses in Botswana on a Thursday. Everybody's like, what the fuck? Where did that come from, bro? What happened? You all right? You need some Seroquel? You need some medication? Thorazine? You going to be all right? What are you? They put baby flavoring in Pepsi. By the way, I felt so goofy because I'm like, you know me. I fact check everything. I'm like, all right, here we go. I go to Google. Baby harvesting Pepsi flavor. You go, it's, oh my God. First of all, he's like citing himself. Other stuff on InfoWars and Prison Planet about the babies, the fetuses are in the Coke, in the Pepsi. And then all the other links are like obviously discredited, far right, absurd, cultural Marxism website shit like with names like that. I don't know the exact name, something with Marxism in it. Just stupid, obviously false, debunked nonsense. Obviously what he's alluding to is, look at what Planned Parenthood does with the baby parts, selling it for profit. But they don't, as we spoke about and as fact checkers went to town on when the right was making this claim with those debunked smear videos, we know that they're donating fetal tissue to do medical research to try to cure diseases. That thing. It's like the opposite of a conspiracy. It's trying to help people. And they have late-term abortions were banned at the place where they did this. So this is all fetal tissue from before viability. So there's no pain in the procedure. It's a medical procedure. It's totally the woman's choice, and they're curing fucking diseases. It wasn't for profit. The money they're discussing is for transportation costs because they thought they were researchers trying to cure diseases. But twist everything. There's another part in this rant where he says, Obama eats babies. I'm going to go ahead and leave it at that. All right, and finally, I'm going to be out of time with this one here, but I got to do it. You guys can watch it later on YouTube. So recently, a Yale professor named Erica Christakis took a principled stand against the offended brigade in college. Blah, blah, blah. On college, way to put it, Kyle. Let me try that again. A Yale professor named Erica Christakis took a strong stand against the offended brigade who were outraged over Halloween costumes. So Huffington Post reports on this. Christakis came under attack in October for her response to a request from the Intercultural Affairs Committee that students avoid wearing racially insensitive costumes, such as Native American headgear, turbans, or blackface. She wrote in an email to students living in the residence hall where she's an administrator that they should be able to wear any costumes they want. Quote, "Is there no room anymore for a child or young person to be a little bit obnoxious, a little bit inappropriate or provocative, or yes, offensive? American universities have become places of censure and prohibition." So that's her direct quote there. So look, that's a relatively benign comment. It's a pretty straightforward argument. And that led to protests. Let me repeat that. A teacher saying, "I'm in favor of freedom of speech and freedom of expression, and calm down one day of the year if people want to go a little crazy and be a little offensive with the costumes. It is Halloween anyway. Let them do it." That led to protests. People said, "This is outrageous. They're suppressing my rights. Where's my safe space? Where's my safe space?" So now she's resigning. She's resigning because of the backlash. Yale released a statement on this backing her up. They said, "Her teaching is highly valued and she is welcome to resume teaching anytime at Yale, where freedom of expression and academic inquiry are the paramount principle in practice." Yeah, I mean, all I have to say is that these guys totally missed the point about liberalism. Liberalism is supposed to be principled. You're supposed to be values-driven. And you're supposed to understand that to defend somebody's right to X is not to defend X. So to say somebody has the right to express a grotesque opinion or put on an outrageous costume is not to say I agree with the grotesque opinion or the outrageous costume. Look, I've done segments before too, man. There was like very rarely, but every once in a while there's a comment that I think or a costume that goes a little too far. There was a Trayvon Martin costume a few years ago. Like, yeah, you're kind of a cunt if that's what you wore. Sorry, but you are. But that's where it ends. Am I going to censor the person? Am I going to write a dissertation on it, a thesis on it? Am I going to try to throw them in jail? Am I going to try to get them fired or whatever? No, because then you cross a line at a certain point and you also become a bad person. To defend somebody's right to X is not to defend X. It's defending the right to X, which is why the ACLU defended the KKK to do a peaceful march. The ACLU is called a liberal organization. No, they're a principled organization. They're an organization that believes in constitutional rights. So even when people they hate, the KKK, want to do something that's constitutionally protected, they go, "I have no choice but to back them up." It's the same thing with this. You're offended by certain costumes or certain speech on campus? Fine. Be offended by it. No problem whatsoever. The problem only becomes when you try to protest to take away other people's rights. No, then you become the problem, and you are acting in a way that is indeed illiberal. All right, I'm out of time, guys. I love you. Mwah. Later.